number one.
The House Transportation Committee will come to order. Welcome, everybody. We have...
Oh, I know these.
Four bills, I guess. we have... we're waiting on a fiscal for 2149. It should be here shortly. So we'll go ahead and open a public hearing on 2150. And Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House Bill 2150 was pre-session filed by the Governor at the request of the Department of Aviation. This measure increases pilot registration fees from $8 to $12 and renewal fees for same from $16 to $24. This measure has attached to it the fiscal analysis attached to it. I should mention beforehand, this measure does have a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. So the fiscal analysis that's attached to it will outline the estimated expenditure and revenue changes accordingly. And there is no revenue impact of this measure. For that, I refer you to the back of your packet for House Bill 2149, which has the no revenue impact statement for House Bill 2150. Don't ask. It's a long story on how that all got.
I was just going to ask.
but you will between the two packets, Madam Chair and members, you have before you the fiscal impact statement and the no revenue impact statement for House Bill 2150.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. I think yes. This is a tree saving measure,
yes.
And I think we can approve of that.
And I am going to go ahead and call up Clem, and sorry, my names are escaping me today. I'm just
Ken Murphy.
Mr. Ken Murphy.
Thank you.
He's usually in another committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the House Transportation Committee. My name is Dan Clem. I'm the Director of the Department of Aviation. We submitted House Bill 2150 for your consideration to increase the pilot registration fees from $8 a year to $12 a year, and then on a renewal, instead of $16 every 2 years, it would be $24 every 2 years. This has a fiscal impact with regard to the increase of revenues for pilot licensing fees. The way statute is set up right now, the Oregon Department of Aviation collects through the pilot registration fees funds that are used to transfer essentially to Oregon Emergency Management for search and rescue efforts and coordination. While many of the bills that are submitted to the department are paid directly to counties and search and rescue organizations, the overall program management for the search and rescue program in the state of Oregon is under the jurisdiction of Oregon Military Department, Oregon Emergency Management, which Mr. Murphy is the administrator for. Should have been shared with you, or maybe being shared with you now, are letters of support from the Oregon Airport Managers Association and also an email from the Oregon Pilots Association indicating their support for this small increase to pilot registration fees, which were last established and not changed since 1999. The need for more revenue is really based upon increasing costs for administrative expenses, but really the increasing costs for conduct of search and rescue operations, specifically fuel, which is the largest expense item that we see, for equipment, and then for food and expenses and that sort of thing. Many of those expenses that they submit for may not be allowable, but the Oregon Emergency Management Department adjudicates which ones are reimbursable, which ones are not. These are for all types of searches and rescues, but in fact, the pilot registration fees, when the programs merged in 99, provide predominantly all of the funds that are used for both air and ground rescues and searches here in the state of Oregon. With that, I can answer any questions or allow Mr. Murphy to speak.
Any questions? Representative Joffler.
Yeah, thank you. And I just became aware of the Department of Aviation's budget as far as details go. I'm familiar with Mr. Murphy's department and how little we do spend in these areas. And it is... that is unfortunate, and if we ever need a lot of work in these areas, we're going to be caught with our pants down, pretty much. So I'm very sympathetic to what you ask here. Mr. Clem, in your overall budget that we have in the good representatives committee, compared to other states, we're really a great deal overall, right? Can you just kind of shed some light on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, we are, but the pilot registration fee varies by state by state. Some states don't charge any, some charge $100 a year. It's all over the map. And in many states, the pilot registration fee just goes back to its Department of Aviation or Department of Transportation. In Oregon, those funds are dedicated only for the search and rescue program. So it is, on the West Coast, one of the smallest feed programs that the aviation department oversees.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? No. Mr. Murphy.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Murphy. I'm the Director of Oregon Emergency Management, which is a division of the Oregon Military Department. I think Mr. Clem covered everything pretty well, and I surely am in favor of this to do this to help with the ongoing cost, not only of the expenses dealing with search and rescue, which I might add, you know, is not only incumbent upon those searches and rescues on the ground, but those search and rescues where we even have a locator beacon on an airplane that goes off, where people have got to get out and try and find that airplane. And this also helps fund a portion of my one individual, one FTE that is responsible in my office for search and rescue. And the Oregon Department of Aviation and Oregon Emergency Management have been partners in this process for many, many years. And so I think it's very important. And I know the Sheriff's Association and the sheriffs who are primarily responsible for search and rescue at the county level and below are in favor of this to keep funding these type of things so that we can conduct our search and rescues in an efficient manner and hopefully at least pay for the employee and some of the other expenses. And as Mr. Clem stated, some of the fuel expenses are, you know, extremely expensive for these aircraft to fly around. That's all I have, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Murphy or Mr. Clem? Representative
Herbert. How about you, Madam Chair? There's no emergency clause on this bill, so I was assuming upon passage it would become effective 91 days.
January 1st, 2010.
It would be January 10. It isn't. Okay. So it wouldn't affect the current biennium at all.
No.
And we'd be partway into the next winter search and rescue season before this becomes effective. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Seeing no other questions here, committee, unless there's some big concerns with this, my wish would be to go ahead and move it to Ways and Means and let our good colleague over here have his way with it. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2150, and I'll open a work session, and I entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2150 to the floor with the due passing recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. And
Representative Schaffler has moved House Bill 2150. The due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? Seeing none, any objections?
Yes. Madam Chair, I'd like it noted for the record that the only one that I know is a pilot among us is not here. Now, maybe there are other pilots here, but the one I know is a pilot, unfortunately, is not here.
Well, he'll appreciate this. Seeing no objections, then House Bill 2150 is passed on to Ways and Means. And I close the work session. And I think we have now received the fiscal for House Bill 2149. So I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2149. And so evidently you're, Dan Slim is the only one here to testify on this, unless I can round somebody up out there. Then, so you can go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the House Transportation Committee. For the record, my name is Dan Clem. I'm Director for the Oregon Department of Aviation. We brought this bill forward to increase the registration fees for aircraft under Oregon statute. In some cases, in most cases, most of the aircraft affected, the registration fee goes from $50 a year to $55 a year. We've added a category in the proposed legislation for single-engine fixed-wing turboprop, which are essentially high-end aircraft that, in terms of cost and complexity and their ability to fly at all different types of altitudes and speeds. And we've increased some of the costs for some of the aircraft who enjoy an inordinately low amount of registration fee comparative to their value and in comparison with other states. If I could hearken back to Representative Schaffler, a question in the last public hearing on House Bill 2150, Oregon's registration fees are well known to be the lowest on the West Coast. California, it's 1% of the aircraft value a year, and recent California law just permitted that, in fact, if the aircraft is in the state 90 days more a year, they are, in fact, taxable for the entire year. It used to be you could be in California, take your plane out of California 91 days, and you wouldn't be taxed. And so states are getting tougher looking at the aircraft registration fees of paying for their fair share. In Oregon, the aircraft registration fees essentially are the state match, the 5% match to the federal monies that we receive for the capital construction projects on the airports. An example of this is the Aurora State Airport, where we relocated the taxiway with using federal funds at $4.3 million. Over $200,000 of that came from aircraft registration fees that were used for the state's 5% match. I'm sorry, $25,000 were used for the state match to the federal funds. This is 19-to-1 money, and that's the predominant use for the aircraft registration fees. One of the reasons we brought the increases to you, while in fact more funds are needed for the match, the reality of it is that the funds can also be used for a grant program, which the agency has not been able to supply to cities and counties for the last 3 years. It's called the FAM Grant, Financial Aid to Municipalities Program, and as cities and counties struggle to find their match monies for their capital construction funds, a good reason for bringing the hike to you was so that we could get back in the business of supplying that 5% match that they need as well. So with that, I do want to point out that I stated this early in other public hearings, but if you own a 747 on line 16, you would have paid $162 a year. We're seeing that we have a number of aircraft that are registered in our database that we don't believe have ever seen Oregon. We just know that this is a good place to register your 747. I'm being facetious there, but the point is that we felt that a hike based on the relative value of some of these aircraft was important. I will mention that the 80% of the aircraft that we're registering in Oregon, the small planes that recreational users or even used for business and search and rescues fall into the $50 category, and we've asked for a $5 increase there. You should have in your packets letters of support from the Oregon Airport Managers Association and an email from the president of the Oregon Pilots Association as well on this House Bill 2149.
Thank you. Representative Schaffler?
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I support what you're doing here. I guess I need some explanation about how we justify these. You made the one example. Clearly, it's a giant, huge, machine. Is that pretty much the same? I mean, you go, there's 200, 110, 90, 55, 40, 30. Is that based on size, carrying capacity, weight, impact on the actual runway itself, whatever that is? And then the second question, and I'll be a devil's advocate here, is there any chance of us losing those people registering here because of these increases? Because I do want to take full advantage of that 19-to-1. If we're going to get federal money, contrary to what some governors say, I'll take every penny they have and get people out there building and maintaining and improving our infrastructure here. Is there any chance of us losing registrations because of these increases? Meaning that, follow me.
Madam Chair, Representative Schauffler, two questions. First one, what's the rationale for the increased percentage? I really tried to stay at 10% to be reasonable here. A number of other states have hiked up their registration fees and found that quite problematic in terms of, or tried to, and found that problematic. Really, the intent of this was to balance it with the current economic conditions and really just provide a small amount to get back into the FAM grant business and make sure that we had enough for the 5%. So it was really hesitancy. We did not go to a weight or a wingspan ratio. Really looked first at the numbers and the amount of aircraft that were there. If you say that you've got 100 aircraft and you hike you put all the burden on those, then you're right. We would lose. We believe that the relative value of the ones that are about $200 a year are worth about $1 million in terms of value or greater. The ones that are worth much less than that, we stuck with about a 10%. So it was the fear of losing those, but in fact also just sticking at about knowing that we wanted to provide a small amount of money in the FAM grant program, just sticking at the 10% level. Not any more scientific than that. Really, the impact on the pilots flying their Cessnas was really the first thing and most important thing we looked at here. We do not want to discourage them with a $5 hike. And the responses that we've been getting are that's not going to do it.
Thank you.
Representative Widener.
Just to follow up on what Representative Schauffler was saying there, so I'm looking at your 162, there's 118 planes registered here as 747s. as you call them, from going to 350, it's 116% increase. What's to stop them from registering those planes in other states, say Wyoming or someplace like that, since they haven't seen Oregon anyway and they're giving us their money? How much of that money are we going to run off? And I'd like to know where we end up, because I'm looking at helicopters, and I know helicopters are not cheap, yet they have some of the lowest fees on here. You're taking them from 50 and 100 to 55 and 110. And a helicopter, they start at about $100,000 and go up for anything that you'd feel safe being in, I should say. Clarify that. Okay. So I'm just looking at what you're doing with the numbers, and they just seem to be all over the board. You're taking single-engine fixed-wing turboprop. Oh, there's 58 of those. Let's take it from $50 to $200, a 300% increase. And I want to know why there's a 300% increase there. Is that still lower than everybody else in the continental U.S.? Or is it now we're getting up to where we're on the upper end?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, the first question in terms of the 116% increase on the upper end. Most of those aircraft have been registered for a number of years and operate here in Oregon. So I don't want to lead you to believe that we've got all these 747s in the database. That's not the truth. The truth is that most of those are based aircraft that are here. Compared with the other states, because they operate here and their airport receives funds for here, they will still likely continue to want to register their aircraft here. 85% of pilots and aircraft owners registering, I say 85%, they want to pay the right charge, and they want to pay their share for the state that they base their aircraft in. Based aircraft is an important component of how the FAA distributes funds. So they, in fact, aren't likely going to go register them in Montana or Wyoming simply because they don't operate out of there. So most of the larger aircraft as well will likely continue to be here. But at some point in time, it made sense that the value of those commercially operating aircraft would in fact pay a greater amount to try to get to the revenue pieces that we want to. To speak to the helicopters, most of those are life flight. They may be corporate, they may be business or news, but in fact, we really tried to take it easy on helicopters simply because a lot of those are used in communities for a variety of reasons, commercial operations certainly, but not of the same dollar value and the volume that the large turbojet fixed wings are operating at. They're generating millions of dollars, and it just, you know, it seemed to still be a small amount to ask them to go from $162 a year to $350 a year. So we sort of took that into account in terms of, you know, what are the, how much commercial money is really coming from the revenues generated by those aircraft as well. Again, California, it's 1% of the purchase price a year. I don't think we're going to be losing a lot of those.
Yes. Follow-up or another question?
It'd be nice to see where we rank nationally. I mean, the fact that you keep mentioning California. California is also one of the highest tax states in the nation, and they're also the state that's bankrupt. So I'd like to see comparison to other states and where we sit, because I don't want to be harder on our pilots than what they'd be facing in Idaho or one of our neighboring states, Utah, Montana, and just see a comparison where we're at before we just go and vote willy-nilly on these, because those are some pretty big jumps that we're looking at.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, what's happening right now is survey is being put together by the National Association of State Aviation Officials. I'm not sure where it's at in terms of its completion, but I can certainly provide information if requested. On the West Coast states.
Any other questions or comments? Oh, sorry. I don't know which hand went up first.
Oh, he did. Go ahead.
Okay, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this takes us back to a conversation we had last week, and that had to do with personal property tax or business property tax on planes, which we don't have in Oregon, if I recall correctly. Is that true?
Madam Chair, Representative Pence, that's true. There is no personal property or business property tax on these planes.
Follow-up.
Many states do have that. So.
Right, so the decision to register is based maybe upon where the plane is most of the time, which would be the proper focus, and then secondly, whether or not they're having to pay a business property tax on the aircraft. Does Oregon attract undue amounts of registered aircraft because we don't have that tax? Or is there indeed a pretty, I mean, a plane can be here, can be there, can be other places. Is there a pretty direct link between its location and its registration?
Madam Chair, Representative Bentz, I believe that at one point in time it did. However, the FAA has clamped down on where you base your aircraft and that it operates there. A number of states also have user fees. They actually capture the end numbers, the tail numbers, if you will, and ask them to, if they aren't based there, to actually pay a usage fee by using that airport. So at one point in time, I think that may have occurred more so than it does now. I think it's probably becoming smaller and smaller. I think if they're based there, they're registering there, and not registering in Oregon just because the price is lower. But I got to tell you that I have about 10% of the database still shows that they are out-of-state owners, and I have no idea whether they land and fly here or not.
Thank you.
Representative Boone.
I just wanted to thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out to Rep. Widener that on the email from the Oregon Pilots Association, they support both 21550 and 2149.
Okay. I'm not really seeing any other questions. Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2149. And I know there was a request for a little more information, but I think that unless anyone has any objections, that we should send this on down to Ways and Means, who will be the ones that would be adjusting any numbers that they felt needed to be adjusted down there. So,
and Madam Chair, I believe this will go to Representatives Edwards Subcommittee.
And Senator Johnson. So.
Senator Johnson. Yeah, we won't forget Senator Johnson. Yeah. But I am sure Mr. Clem will make sure we all get that information on this committee as well. Are you entertaining a motion,
Madam Chair? I'm going to go into a work session on House Bill 2149.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2149 with a due pass recommendation with a referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. It's been moved by Representative Schaffler that House Bill 2149 should be passed with a due pass recommendation and referred to the Subcommittee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? Seeing none, do I want a voice vote on this or any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2149 is passed. And thank you, committee, for that. And then work session on 2149 is closed. And I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2235. And Patrick, you want to remind us?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2235, we heard last on January 26th. This is the measure that authorizes ODOT to go into private property without notice to the property owner to cut down and remove trees that are deemed to be of a substantial risk of damage or injury by obstructing, hanging over, or otherwise encroaching on a state highway. When we heard that last meeting, subsequent to that, there have been amendments that have been drafted. Those amendments are photocopied on the back of the staff measure summary. They essentially replace the printed bill. So the language that's in front of you on the dash one amendments becomes the bill. The substantive differences, and Amy can correct me if I'm wrong, the substantive differences are two, I believe. One is that the amendments stipulate that the department may go on a property without notice in cases of, quote, immediate and substantial risk, unquote. That's one difference. And the other one, I believe, is that the amendments delete provisions exempting the department from civil liability. Those are the two changes from the original bill. And you'll notice for the dash one amendments, we have a minimal expenditure and a no revenue impact statement.
Thank you. Representative Schaffler has a question. And Amy,
yeah,
do you want to come up?
Yeah, that's what I was going to request, please.
Yes.
It's my question is directed at Amy, not Patrick. I went and talked to my my good friend Wayne Krieger, Representative Krieger, who is a logger and a woodsman and a small land woodland owner. And he specifically talked about certain kind of cuts when cutting down these kinds of trees that are leaning one way and get them to direct another way. My question is, do we have, and I think I actually did ask about this in the original hearing, and I'm not against this bill, just so you know, but are there experience, the crews out there doing this, clearly they must have some experience in cutting down trees and logging, I would hope, and with the, whenever possible, whenever safely possible, to take into consideration the value of these trees to the landowner. Do they have that experience, and do you have specific policy directed right at that, and all the crews are aware of the fact that, you know, we just don't want them out there willy-nilly cutting down trees, and I'm not suggesting they are, but even if it is, I've seen some pretty big trees leaning into the highway, and there's a lot of value there, and my concern is that they don't take that in consideration, and I want them to. So you want to just talk about my concerns here?
Chair Beyer, Representative Schaffler, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. Our crews are trained in the cutting of trees, and I think where it's possible, we also have certified foresters on the staff, and where it's possible, they get involved. Recall that this bill is a very narrow, direct kind of authority where there's an emergency situation. So in terms of considering the value of the tree, I would have to say, Representative, that the consideration is whether there is an emergency. Now, the whenever ODOT cuts a tree that is from private property, even if we've noticed in cases where we notice the private property owner, that is the property of the private property owner, not ODOT's. And that where we take it down without notice, it would be stacked and notification given so that they can pick up their own property. So the decision that there's an emergency situation is not at all taken lightly. And so that is the primary concern, is the emergency, the risk, to motorists driving by. I can certainly talk to our maintenance folks. There's a rule writing piece in here, but Patrick, that is the third element that's changed, a rule writing piece for notification after this kind of an action is taken. What I can talk to our chief of maintenance about is, you know, whether the value of the tree comes into it at all. But I would stress that this is a safety bill, and that's all it is about. So that I would say that that's all our primary consideration. Follow up.
Thank you, and thank you, Madam Chair. And look, and, Amy, I understand, and I agree, and I believe you. I just wanted to express my concerns that they very judiciously use this authority. And I'd be interested, once that rule is made, to see that rule and what it says, and just for my own edification, because there's always next season, as Representative Jensen likes to say. Under an emergency situation where there's a potential immediate threat of a tree falling into the right-of-way and oncoming traffic, I would hope to God you would just go ahead and take care of that right now, even without this bill, because it could be my family driving there on the road. But I hope, and I'm sure you do, that and everyone at the department understands my concerns, because we are literally allowing you to walk onto private property here and take something down that is, it could be a very great value, and I want to be very careful with that.
Absolutely, and Chair Beyer, Representative Schaffler, again, we recognize that is a private property owner's property. And all we want to do is get it out of the way of motorists and keep it from blocking, you know, Highway 26 from being shut down. And I will pass that along, and we'll report back to your representative when we do use this.
Representative Boone. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. She did say Highway 26. And I actually did for Representative Schaffler for your calming downness. I can assure you that our local guy up there, the new guy, assured me the same thing. We had a case of a lot of the trees that had fallen down during the windstorm just recently. And were cut. My concern was they were cut right to the fog line. And that was just to get things open and people moving. And they weren't able to take the time at that point and, you know, yard them back up. But they are very careful. My very limited experience when something like that has happened and ODOT has been called by the fire department to come and dispatch a tree, because we're really not, although all our firefighters are loggers, but the ODOT is on their property usually. It, you know, encroaches onto the thing. And they seem to be, to me, aware of, and the loggers will all stand there and argue about it. We've got traffic shut down. What's the best way to cut that tree so that preserves the value, like into one piece, two pieces, or what? And I feel real good about what they're already doing.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to mention that because the civil liability element's been removed from the bill, the department, of course, would be concerned about damage, and thus the concerns that Representative Schaffler raises might be mooted by that, or at least muted by that by possibility of having to pay for something you shouldn't have cut down. But that's probably a small consolation. But I think it is. It did take that element out, so that now not that the department is going to rush out and start whacking down trees right and left, but now that they would have to worry about that kind of civil liability protection, because it's not in the bill now.
Chair Beyer, Representative Benz, that's a true point.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions for you, so I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing.
We're in a work session.
Oh, that's right. I won't close the public hearing because we don't have one. Keep me honest, guys.
Are you entertaining a motion?
Yes.
Is this just going to the floor?
It is. Adopt the amendment.
Oh. Okay. So we have to adopt the dash one. I move that we adopt the dash one amendment.
House Bill 2149.
2235. Thank you. It's been moved that we adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 2235. Any discussion? Seeing none, any objections? The dash one amendments are adopted. And want to move the.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I move. House Bill 2235 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
It's been moved. House Bill 2235 as amended, moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments, Representative Shaw?
Only to point out the irony here, Madam Chair, that normally I'm banging the drum to cut down trees, and here I am, paranoid that they're going to cut down the wrong tree or ruin its value. Other than that, I'm nothing.
We have you on tape.
While we have the opportunity, would you like?
Any more comments? Seeing none, any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2235 is moved to the floor. And is there anybody who would like to carry the bill? Representative Boone, since you...
I could do that.
Yeah. You probably live in an area that has more of this than anybody else does.
We have our share, that's for sure.
Close the work session on House Bill 2235. And I'm going to... open work session on House Bill 2040. And Patrick.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2040, we heard last Wednesday on February 18th. This is the measure that expands the offense of failure to maintain a safe distance from an emergency vehicle or ambulance to include roadside assistance vehicles and tow vehicles. As I said, we heard this last Wednesday. You have before you a minimal fiscal impact statement and a no revenue impact statement for this measure.
Thank you, Patrick. Committee, you probably remember this well. Since the committee hearing, there has been a small issue that's popped up, and I'm going to ask Mr. Campbell if he'd come up and talk to us about it, decide which way we want to go.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here representing AAA on House Bill 2040. Following the hearing last Wednesday, the issue was brought up about not the changes that are being made to the law, but the underlying law itself that requires a vehicle to slow down, and that is not defined very clearly, so it's very difficult for a law enforcement official to know whether or not a vehicle is complying with the law. What has been brought as a recommendation is by putting in statute a requirement that a vehicle that is passing an emergency vehicle or a tow truck that's on the side of the road would reduce its speed by 5 miles below the posted speed limit, which gives a law enforcement a definitive target to understand whether or not a vehicle is in compliance. From our perspective, we're happy to work on that with this committee here in the House, or we're happy to make that change over in the Senate, and the people who developed the bill are all supportive of the change. So whether it's here or there, we're happy to make whatever arrangements need to be made to change the law accordingly.
Thank you. And committee, we have time that we could get the amendment and bring it back and fix it, or we can send it over, so feedback on that. Representative Boone?
Well, I was just going to say, and he beat me to the punch, I did receive the email, too, and thought that was a reasonable request, because I'd kind of wondered the same thing myself.
Yeah. Representative Berger?
Madam Chair, there's nothing that I hate worse than the speech on the floor that says, please pass this bill so they can fix it in the Senate. Mm-hmm. So I would counsel that we fix it now.
Thank you. Representative Call?
I'm just to make sure. So, if there's a tow truck operating on the side of the highway with its lights on and it's a 65 zone, the law would be that they would have to go 60.
Madam Chair, Representative Call, that's correct. And they, if there is a lane open to the left, they would have to move into the left, that left lane if it was safe to do so. And if not, they could stay in that lane, but they would have to reduce their speed to 60 miles per hour under that scenario.
And is 60 adequate? I mean, I guess that's my question. I mean, if we're gonna work on this thing, I was very pleased to hear last Wednesday's testimony that no one in our state has ever been killed while operating a tow truck on the side of the road. And if we're going to really get at this thing and do what's adequate, I just wonder if it's adequate. If you say it is, if you say 60 is adequate with the requirement that they move to the left, if that's you think that that's adequate, then fine with me. I trust it.
Madam Chair, Representative Call, since the amendment wouldn't be ours, what I'll do is I'll work with the folks that are proposing the amendment to find out what they think is appropriate. They mentioned 5 miles below the posted speed limit, but it may be that there's a more appropriate amount of reduction that's required, and we'll work with them to develop whatever amendments to the legislation that they would like.
Representative Shoffling.
Thank you. And I've had to make one of those speeches on the floor before, and it's not pleasant. So I'm not interested. I'd prefer to fix it here, Madam Chair. If it was we were under the gun for time, I'd say yes. I am interested in hearing this language about when you have to slow down, when you don't have to slow down. If you move to the left, you have to slow down. If there's a lane to the left or two lanes to the left, you have to slow down, and all that. I it's kind of confusing. And I'm not so sure, you know, if a police officer, if there's some issue going on the side of the road, is that police officer going to be worrying about people, how fast they're going by, as long as they're not putting them in danger? It's kind of confusing to me, Mr. Campbell, what we're doing here. So I look forward to talking to you about it, though. I support the bill concept, so you needn't worry about me.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, I appreciate that. And it's the existing laws it leads now, but I would be happy to come in and talk to you further about it.
Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, I trust that with Mr. Campbell's help, we can come to terms with this. I was going to speak to Representative Call's 5-mile-an-hour issue. If I'm driving, 65 is pretty much freeway, and if I'm driving on the freeway, I don't want to suddenly go into a fog bank and find that they're going 45 because of an emergency vehicle when I didn't see it coming. There's the danger of too much slowing also, and that's why the flashing lights are there to warn you. So I think 5 miles an hour is very reasonable in my kind of way of thinking on this, because it says slow down, that gets you slow.
Thank you. Representative Boone?
And just from experience, I think Representative Call has a very good point. If there's a car crash going on and there are emergency vehicles in the lanes, and sometimes they're in the lanes, you're probably going to have traffic stopped or moving very closely, and it'll be guided. It's on the freeway, though, and Representative Berger, if it's a fog bank and you're going 65, you should get a ticket.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But maybe I'm moving into a...
I see what you're saying, though.
Yeah.
But follow up, just a yes. Quick one. I think that Representative Call has a good point, and I know we probably don't want to get into something like if you're going 50, you go 45. If you're going 60, you go 50. That gets too cumbersome, but I'm sure you guys... we'll work something out, and I'm sure that the law enforcement will have a word in there, too. So,
thank you. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I support the 5 miles an hour off, too, because that works out to about 15 miles an hour. So, because when it's 55, people are going 65 or 70, so they'd be down to 50 at that point, so, which is a substantial decrease in their speed.
Well put. All right, committee. With that, I appreciate your help, and we'll go ahead and close the work session today and bring this back with an amendment. And thank you. I think we've made it through all our work, and I appreciate
our good work.
Yeah.
And our tenacity.
Are we adjourned?